The measure stems from Project 06, a government plan to build a unified digital identity system. Officials present the move as a means to stop scams and transition toward a cashless economy. But the scale is staggering. With just 113 million accounts left active, nearly half of the country's bank accounts vanished from the banking system in a single sweep. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, your professor for today, and we are digging into a combination of really bad news and really good news. We're hitting the Financial Freedom Report number 91, and there's a number of actually really good items. One that we've talked about on the roundtable already, I mentioned, that we'll get to cover today and a little bit more in depth. But then also some really incredible improvements or kind of like steps towards seeing a couple of other layer two protocols finally come to fruition and start to be far more deeply integrated and easily accessible to people that I really think, and I think this is going to really kind of kick off or make a move in this bull market. I genuinely think we're going to be really, really close to seeing this in action. And I am really, really excited because this plummets. The major barriers to bringing new users on are about to just collapse at the exact same time that legacy and establishment systems are aggressively pushing for more CBDCs and aggressively pushing for more control and restrictions, which is just going to make the alternatives that are getting easier and better and lower friction, it's just going to make them look so much better. And this could not have better timing because I am now at the point where we're kind of seriously talking about what Pairdrive might use when we start integrating, you know, Bitcoin and just payments in general, because I think there's going to be a really interesting use case that has been completely dropped by the side, like completely underutilized, not even underutilized, not even at all utilized in kind of a, that could be a really fascinating way of interacting with and using a peer-to-peer network that has never come to fruition. And maybe I'm wrong about exactly how great of an experience it could be or why it might not ever catch up, you know, get off the ground, or why it could have like really serious network effect problems. But I've never even seen anybody try it, so I can't help but be like, well, let's at least make it happen and just see. So stay tuned on that. And I've got some announcements and some other things that I bring up with Pairdrive at the end of this. Real quick, I just want to say thank you to Ledin, L-E-D-N.io, for Bitcoin-backed loans. They have saved me from an enormous cost in Bitcoin because I can take out a loan against my Bitcoin and not sell it. I would already be looking back on the housework that I've done, and I would be hating myself if I had not had this tool available to me. So if you live on a Bitcoin standard and you understand the risks, like, don't be stupid about it, but this is an incredibly useful tool if you haven't taken advantage yet. Also, don't forget to check out PubKey, PubKey.app, and the conversation we recently had with John Carvalho on their vision for a new stack of protocols to re-decentralize the web. If you are building censorship-resistant tools, this is not something to sleep on. We are looking very, very closely at it for Pairdrive-related things, and I think you should too. And then also get your light health in order, get your hormones right, get your energy levels right with Git Chroma. This is red light therapy. This is blue light blocking. It is light made for humans, and you have a 10% discount with code BitcoinAudible. And then lastly, a shout out to HRF for their amazing financial freedom report, which we're about to get into, the Oslo Freedom Forum, which is legendary, and then just for being amazing. Links and details to all of it will be down in the show notes. All right, so let's go ahead and get into today's read. We've got some really good stuff in the guys' take afterwards, so stay tuned, and let's jump right into our article. And it's titled Financial Freedom Report, Issue 91 by the Human Rights Foundation. Good morning, readers. In Vietnam, the central bank deactivated more than 86 million bank accounts on September 1st, erasing nearly half the country's financial accounts. The move is part of a national push for mandatory biometric ID, framed by officials as a way to curb fraud and reduce reliance on cash. While the Vietnamese affected can, in theory, recover accounts through submission of biometric verification, the policy abruptly cut millions off from their own money overnight. Meanwhile, El Salvador passed a new investment banking law that allows private banks to offer Bitcoin services, like deposits, loans, and payments. The catch? Services are only available to high-net-worth individuals, effectively sidelining most Salvadorans. The move, which runs counter to IMF requests to scale back Bitcoin exposure and initiatives, comes as President Nayib Bukele faces mounting criticism for democratic backsliding. In Freedom Tech news, Swapso, an Indian Bitcoin app, integrated both Lightning and the Liquid networks, enabling faster, cheaper, and more privacy-protecting Bitcoin payments for 1.6 billion people living under an oppressive regime. In a region rolling out its own central bank digital currency, such grassroots tools can make Bitcoin more practical for everyday use. We end with an essay from the Journal of Democracy, in which University of Chicago professor Paul Staniland examines how mass protests have toppled governments in Nepal, Bangladesh, and Sri Lanka in the past 3 years. He shows how corruption, economic crisis, and weak institutions left these regimes fragile, and how youth-led movements are now testing whether their demands can translate into lasting democratic change. Now, let's get into it. Vietnam. Millions of bank accounts deleted. On September 1st, Vietnam's central bank deactivated more than 86 million bank accounts lacking, quote, mandatory biometric authentication. The measure stems from Project 06, a government plan to build a unified digital identity system. Officials present the move as a means to stop scams and transition toward a cashless economy. But the scale is staggering. With just 113 million accounts left active, nearly half of the country's bank accounts vanished from the banking system in a single sweep, while funds remained theoretically recoverable through in-person biometric verification. The policy risks excluding rural, elderly, and overseas citizens, alongside dissidents who cannot easily comply. The broad closures illustrate how mandatory and top-down identification policies can cause mass financial exclusion. Reports suggest Vietnam's already high digital asset usage is further increasing in the wake of this policy. El Salvador, new banking law amid democratic backslide. El Salvador passed a new investment banking law allowing private investment banks to offer services in Bitcoin. This will include deposits, loans, and payments. These offerings will be limited to high net worth investors, with a capital requirement of $50 million and $250,000 in liquid assets. This leaves everyday Salvadorans sidelined. The law also contradicts repeated IMF requests for President Nayib Bukele's government to reduce exposure to its Bitcoin initiatives. This included removing Bitcoin's status as legal tender, unwinding the state's participation in Chivo Wallet, and increasing oversight of digital assets. The announcement also comes as the country faces mounting criticism for democratic backsliding. Indefinite re-election is now allowed. Courts are filled with regime loyalists. And a prolonged state of emergency has left El Salvador with the world's highest incarceration rate. Cuba integrates into Chinese payment system and represses protests. In Hibara, eastern Cuba, a 20-hour electricity blackout sparked rare street protests. Cubans took to the streets banging pots and pans together and chanting freedom before security forces moved in. At least a dozen people were arrested, underscoring how the Communist Party of Cuba continues to punish peaceful demonstrations. New surveys show blackouts now rank as Cubans' top concern, surpassing even empty supermarket shelves, inflation that has collapsed the Cuban peso, and wages that barely cover the cost of basic food items. While Cubans endure repression, blackouts, and scarcity, the PCC, the Communist Party of Cuba, is touting its newfound integration into China's cross-border interbank payment system, or CIPS. This is more political than practical, doing little to improve the strenuous financial realities of Cubans. Kazakhstan. Central bank lauded for CBDC despite authoritarian governance. Kazakhstan's central bank was just awarded the quote, Pioneering CBDC Initiative Award for its CBDC. The digital tinge at this year's Global CB Plus DC conference in the Bahamas. The international praise obscures the risks of introducing a government-controlled digital currency in an authoritarian context. Kazakhstan scored just 23 out of 100 in Freedom House's 2023 Freedom in the World report. Officials routinely ban protests, conduct arbitrary arrests, and even impose internet blackouts to silent dissent. In such an environment, a CBDC would make it easier for the state to freeze, seize, or selectively restrict the finances of activists and critics, amplifying repression. Widespread corruption further heightens concerns, raising doubts that promises of transparency will outweigh the risks of political favoritism and targeted financial control. India expands online censorship powers. India expanded its censorship capabilities with a new government platform called Sahyog, which lets federal ministries, state agencies, district officials, and even local police request takedowns of online content they deem, quote, detrimental to law and order. Since its launch in October 2024, officials have requested nearly 300 takedown requests, covering over 3,400 URLs. Platforms like Meta and Google have complied, while X has taken matters to court, calling Sahyog a, quote, censorship portal. This shift bypasses Supreme Court safeguards on censorship orders. HRF expresses deep concern over this expansion of censorship and urges India's government to reconsider these policies and uphold the right to freedom of expression. Learn more about the Indian government's stifling of free expression from former Oslo Freedom Forum speaker Raqib Hamid Naik here. Recommended content. Why South Asia's Regimes Keep Falling by Paul Staniland. In the Journal of Democracy, University of Chicago professor Paul Staniland examines how mass protests toppled governments in Nepal, Bangladesh, and Sri Lanka in just 3 years. The essay highlights how entrenched political corruption, economic hardship, and weak public institutions left these governments vulnerable, and how decentralized, youth-led protest movements are forcing change. For the young demonstrators driving these movements, Staniland argues the challenge ahead is ensuring their demands translate into lasting democratic change. Read it here. The link will be available in the show notes. Bitcoin and Freedom Tech News. Swapso integrates Lightning and Liquid networks with Breeze SDK. Swapso, a self-custodial Bitcoin wallet app in India, has rolled out support for both Lightning and Liquid network transactions powered by the Breeze Software Development Kit, or SDK. Swapso users can now send and receive sats, the smallest unit of Bitcoin, instantly, at lower fees, and with greater privacy than traditional on-chain transactions. The integration strengthens Swapso's utility in a country where high fees and limited financial access can be barriers to grassroots Bitcoin adoption and the financial freedom that follows. As India's authoritarian regime rolls out its CBDC, the digital rupee, open tools that reinforce the accessibility and practicality of Bitcoin run paramount. Albi, testing Spark Wallet integration. Albi, a self-managed software that allows you to interact with the Lightning Network and perform Bitcoin transactions sovereignly, is now experimenting with a Spark integration. Spark is a new Bitcoin payments protocol that uses state chains to move unspent transaction outputs off the blockchain, allowing ownership to change hands without recording every transfer on-chain. This makes payments faster, cheaper, and more private. Combining Albi's ease of use with Spark's transaction efficiency could bring permissionless and sovereign payments to a much wider audience of dissidents, activists, and users. The takeaway: new Layer 2 protocols can improve usability and increase Bitcoin's transaction throughput, but they also require greater trust in operators of application layers like Spark, a trade-off that must be weighed in individual contexts. Cashew Development Kit introduces FFI bindings for interoperability. Developers have made a key update to the Cashew Development Kit, or CDK, that will help bring eCash to more people. By adding new tools called bindings, CDK's privacy-preserving wallet technology can now be used in more common programming languages like Python, Swift, and Kotlin. In practice, this means developers can more easily build Cashew-powered wallets for iOS and Android without needing to learn Rust, the language CDK was originally written in. This release lowers barriers for mobile apps and could accelerate the spread of Cashew eCash as an easy private way to use Bitcoin, a decisive advantage for activists who need discrete, censorship-resistant tools to fundraise and transact under repressive regimes. Libreria de Satoshi announces Bitcoin Core Principles course. This course by Libreria de Satoshi, an HRF grantee and Latin American Bitcoin Education Initiative, explores Bitcoin's core principles across decentralization, scarcity, and immutability. Participants will study key readings, join workshops, and engage in peer learning. For human rights defenders, the course offers a deeper understanding of why Bitcoin's design resists censorship and seizure, and how its principles can support financial freedom under repressive conditions. Applications close October 7, 2025, and the course runs October 13th to 27, 2025. Learn more here. Bitcoin Chiang Mai, Bitcoin White Paper Day event. Bitcoin Chiang Mai is hosting a Bitcoin White Paper event in Thailand on October 31st, 2025. It will feature a presentation by HRF Global Bitcoin Adoption Fellow, Win Ko Ko Ong, and other Bitcoin activists sharing stories of resilience, activism, and financial freedom. The focus is on how Bitcoin empowers people facing repression, especially in places like Burma, and how it shapes global conversations on human rights. Beyond the talks, it is a space to connect, be inspired, and explore how innovation can empower the global majority and beyond. Learn more about it here. All right, so that wraps up the Financial Freedom Report. There is another recommended content. So this is Coding the Future of Bitcoin Freedom with Abubakar Nurkhalil, which is, I think this was recommended content on one that we actually did on the show not too long ago, but I'll have the link to this in the show notes as well. This is a Nigerian Bitcoin developer and actually an HRF grantee who talks about his journey from being a self-taught coder to Bitcoin Core contributor. But he has a lot of really interesting things to share as well, just on the idea of what the role Bitcoin has been playing and continues to play across the continent of Africa, with its further adoption and growing role to hedge against inflation, against growing capital controls, banking failures, all of that stuff. So I'll have the link to that in the show notes if you want to check it out. It is a video, so it's on the Bitcoin Source podcast, actually. So I'll try to have the YouTube and the Fountain link if you just want to listen to it while you're doing other stuff. But I want to kick this off with talking about Vietnam. And this is something that we actually talked about because I pulled this in as a news item for the roundtable. So if you haven't listened to the last roundtable, this item about Vietnam actually already came up. You've probably already heard my take on it, but I wanted to hit it from a different perspective because this is a really important dynamic that, and this is something that I've talked about for when it comes to Bitcoin and these kind of open protocols for a really long time. And it's really interesting to see something like Spark with a second layer run as a state chain where you can actually still take those final UTXOs to chain, but you are also dependent on a state chain operator, but the level of privacy and ease of basically global access. So what I'm getting at is, this is why I've always said Bitcoin is necessarily going to be bigger than the dollar, because the only way, or necessarily going to be bigger than any fiat can, because only if fiat does everything possible to concede, to essentially give itself concessions over its restrictions of people's use, because otherwise it will necessarily sideline or evict tons of innocent people from its system who will have nowhere to go but an open source permissionless network. And with everything, with the censorship just exploding and kind of coming from all of different directions. And like the idea that international organizations and, you know, the UN and these people are literally praising countries like Kazakhstan for instituting their CBDC. And we had Lagarde from the ECB recently talking about why a CBDC isn't about like serving customers. It's literally in a race to make sure that customers don't get served or don't have a better alternative. Actually, you know what? I'll actually play this clip because I have this somewhere right nearby. One second. Well, it won't be a second for you because I can edit this.
But we are victim of our own legacies and complications and this democratic process that we praise ourselves with, and rightly so, but which is operating as too much of a drag at a time when speed is really of the essence. I'll share one frustration with you. When I started back 6 years ago, I was adamant to push for the digital euro and to make sure that we would be digitally anchored with central bank money. Given the time that it takes, and this is currently pending before the European Parliament, given the time that it takes, I will be gone. In other words, my mandate will have expired when the digital euro is eventually launched for good. This is too long. It takes time. When you want to launch something, it has to be right. And the same applies for securitization, for capital market union, for banking union, and what have you. But we just have to accelerate. So my plea is for an understanding of the speed at which reforms have to take place and change has to occur. Because we don't want to be left in the dust. I don't.
So here's the crazy part about this clip. And in the context of some of the other conversation, which I didn't listen to the entire thing, but I've listened to a larger section of it, but this is kind of an important clip from it. Importantly, she thinks the checks and balances are an obstacle, that democracy, that the idea that the people actually have to care about and have to have input and explicitly need to decide whether or not they even want this, is just something that's creating a drag and keeping her from getting things that she wants done. And this is a pretty universal, the fact that this is not booed or recognized, like this is a common refrain. This is absolutely their position. This is how they think about it. What the people want is an annoying thing that gets in their way of the vision that they have for what everybody else's money is going to do, for the degree of control and surveillance they want to have, and how they actually want to run things. We are a nuisance. We are in their way. And importantly, they fear, quote, being left in the dust, meaning they fear being replaced by the things that the people are actually choosing. And think about what that suggests. They want to be able to cement this financial system into the global structure so that people cannot escape it, so that they remain the ones in power and with all of the wealth, the control over the wealth. Which, of course, they see it that way. Of course they see it that way. They are in a massive position of power and they want to remain in that position of power. I mean, think about like any company. Think Amazon or Twitter or something, or X, whatever. And think how they are going to think about dealing with competition and wanting to remain the most important and the central to, you know, shipping and delivery of goods across the country versus the platform that most people are sharing and speaking on, because that gives them influence, it gives them wealth, it gives them power. The difference is the ECB and Lagarde see people having the right to choose something different as something that's annoyingly getting in their way. And she literally says we have to accelerate. We need to get around the frictions. We need to get around people's choices and any of the checks and balances around government power. And we need to work as hard and as fast as we can to force people into this system. And understand the establishment, the whole structure of the government systems and the West does not see this as a problem. This is perfectly acceptable reasoning and framing. And going back to the example of Vietnam, with 86 or 81 million bank accounts. I can't remember exactly what the number was, but essentially 40%, almost half of the entire country's bank accounts being frozen and or shut down, explicitly inaccessible because people have not passed a biometric scanning that forces them into a government digital identity system, a single overarching structure of an identity system that gets everybody, that it basically ties every person to every single thing that they do. Understand, there's going to be like horrible, horrible fallout from a structure like that. The more and more they try to actually implement that, the problems and the issues of someone who hacks into that or basically pulls all of that data, which will absolutely happen, is going to be insane. So why is it that Bitcoin is necessarily going to be, or if it is successful, will necessarily be larger than all of these things? Is because all of the marginalized people, the 86 million who lost their bank accounts, now can only be served by a permissionless open payment system. And the greater the control and the greater the lockdown on the capital and the access into the financial system these people push, the greater and greater the number of people who won't have an alternative except something in the Bitcoin system. And by the words of Lagarde, it seems very, very clear that the idea is to restrict what people can do. They want to make sure that that's the case because that's exactly how they're going to stop the capital flight out of their structure. How the hell else are they going to do it? I mean, just listen to that whale who heads the BIS, the Bank of International Settlements. He went on this long rant about all the benefits of CBDCs. Not once did he talk about convenience or freedom. Not once. It was all about how much control they can have, the degree of visibility that they can have, the fact that they can do smart contracts and they can institute carbon credits and expirations and stuff to help boost the economy by forcing people to do things. His whole list was like a who's who of dystopian nightmare characteristics of a central global financial control system. This will be great, and we'll make sure nobody's buying steak, and instead they're going to buy a bunch of ho-hos and fake cancer soy burgers. Which, by the way, Beyond Burger is about to go out of business. Just fun little news. Their stock literally looks like shitcoin. But anyway, back to the point, is as these controls and as the restrictions on who and how these systems can be used, there will be an entire subset of society that just basically gets enslaved. That, I mean, I think we're already seeing it, right? Is that you have an alternative economy, you have a trapped economy, and then you have the people who think this is a good idea for some retarded reason. And then I guess there's a fourth subset, which are the people who are basically in charge and are massively profiting off of all of this. And all of this getting worse and worse will only increase the pressure for the alternative economy. And what's funny is we've actually seen this. They link to a report in Vietnam. So this is the Vietnamese, I think it was done by the Vietnamese government. Let me bring it back up again. I forgot. Yeah, the State Bank of Vietnam has actually reported that this has led to growth in crypto assets and Bitcoin use. I'll actually read the section just for the hell of it. So the reactions and global implications, and this is at the bottom of this report. So in Vietnam, the results are mixed. Officials praise the cleanup for security. Locals report minor disruptions, but no mass protests. Locals report minor disruptions. I would love to know who reported on that when we're talking about 86 million accounts, almost half of the banking system and people who are using it getting locked out. I really want to know how we came to the term minor disruptions as being an accurate way to explain what's going on here. But, quote, crypto use is surging as an alternative. And just because there's two really good tidbits in the rest of this, I'm going to go ahead and hit number two. So it's international. The US and EU commentators see it as a cautionary tale for privacy erosion, linking to Palantir surveillance or the UK's digital ID debates. Time Media noted a similar or smaller freeze of 3 million accounts in August 2025. Three, outlook. By end of 2025, Vietnam expects near 100% biometric coverage for active accounts. Globally, it accelerates debates on balancing security with freedoms. For example, India's Aadhaar system faced lawsuits over data breaches. So I just thought that was hilarious that we're already, like this, none of this is old, right? All of this is brand new within the last few years. Basically, 2019 and 2020 really kicked this off in a flood, right? A tsunami of censorship and CBDC pushes all occurred because of the psychosis, the mass psychosis of 2020. And India's system is already being hit with lawsuits because of data breaches. The obvious conclusion of trying to put everybody's data and biometric access and digital ID into one universal structure, into one central location. The idea that this is a security improvement, that this is so unbelievably stupid. It's not even like bad governance. It's not even authoritarian. I mean, it is all of those things, but it's literally just horrible systems design. Like, this cannot sustain itself indefinitely. This is going to blow up in everybody's faces, and the entire population is going to be the ones who pay for it. But I also just wanted to read another line from earlier on in this report because I literally laughed out loud when I heard it. It says, for the economy, so this is under the implications and analysis section. It says, for the economy, by pushing for a cashless society, Vietnam is positioning itself for greater digital transformation and financial inclusion. And I just could not. 86 million bank accounts are frozen and inaccessible, and they are calling this a win for financial inclusion. If there could not be a better example of how all of these political buzzwords being absolute utter meaningless dog shit, that is it right there. Yes, we shut down half of the fucking bank accounts in this country, but we did it to be inclusive. Holy shit. It's literally like a real-life SNL skit. The gaslighting is so insane. And I can't tell if these people are just delusional to a staggering degree, or if they're just so dishonest that they don't know how to actually address things without being gaslighting. Like, they want all of the... They're willing to just completely undermine the definition or the genuine meanings of everything so that they can just say and call everything, make everything sound nice, but actually only have the singular purpose of serving their agenda, backing up their opinion, and instituting more and more of their control. Is that just like a natural human thing where there's just like this subset of people who are that lost? They're just like kind of sociopathic, and definitions and language and like the truth, like actual genuine truth, just doesn't matter at all. It's just about, how do I frame this? How do I use language as a tool to just defraud everyone into thinking that all of the things that are good for me and support my opinion and what I think are actually the things that they want? And how do I just use language as a tool to cheat? I mean, I know people like that. I know people legitimately, people that I have met who have no interest, who lie to them. I really think they lie to themselves, though. That's the thing about the kind of people in my personal life that I know that are like that, is they are lying to themselves. If they had to say, it's like one of those things that, like, my grandfather just died. And it's one of those things that if you're not, and by the way, he was 100 years old, and I love the guy, and he was a legend, but you know, this is a part of life, and he, you know, went downhill for the last couple of years. But it's one of those things that, like, when you're just like trying to stay busy and you're just trying to like get to the next thing and help somebody out, or, you know, go visit your parents and all of this thing, you do all the, you get lost in kind of the minutiae and the day to day. And it's this way to kind of avoid having to talk about what it is or kind of admit it to yourself. And then as soon as you have to tell someone else that it has happened, you have to actually say it out loud, that's when it just like hits. You know, one of the points in which it really hit me really bad was when we were at Papa's house. We lost my grandmother a number of years ago now. I don't even know. It's one of those things that, like, oh, it was just like last year, but then you find out it was like 10 years ago, probably like 7 or 8 maybe. But I would still go to, you know, Granny and Papa's house, right? And there was this incredible nostalgia with being there and spending time with them. And my grandfather was one of the most patient men in the world. I think I saw him angry like twice. And even his angry state was patient. I don't think I could ever be as patient and collected in my day-to-day as Papa was all the time. But like the point that hit me harder than any, it's one of those things that even when he's kind of like going downhill, you think, oh, well, we'll still go to Papa's house. There were a couple times where we got him out of assisted living just to have, you know, the whole family together and go sit. And he's got to sit on his patio and we were still out in the yard, like, which was the thing that we did from when I was, you know, like tiny, since before I could even remember. And like the hardest point in the entire thing was when I had to say out loud, like I can't even fucking say it right now, when I realized we would never go back and do that again. Like you see, like I don't have any problem, like, you know, through the episode or whatever, like, there's something about saying the truth out loud that makes it hit different, that it changes something in your own mind, that you recognize reality. And there's something in these people who want to use everything for control. I genuinely think this is one of the biggest political divides, is people who are unwilling to say the truth out loud because of how much it changes what's going on inside your own mind. There is a visceral power to saying the truth out loud. And because it's one of those things that you have to recognize it internally to get it out of your mind and project it. Because you're, you know, maybe there's an element too of, if it's only, oh, Jesus Christ, if it's only like locked away in your mind, it doesn't replicate, right? Like, you're not extending that to other people. You're not allowing yourself to recognize or think about what you lost. And that's why so many people, I think, on the, specifically on the political left right now, granted, you know, the right is being just as easily called into all this stuff, because now it seems like immigration's about to be used for the digital ID system, because now that's the most convenient way to implement, you know, universal ID in the U.S. because it seems like the political winds have shifted to the right. And that's how you get authoritarianism with that group of people. But the left has been radicalized on this, refuse to say the truth out loud, simple truths, to the point of like horrific hate and violence. And that is why. And this is exactly why somebody like Charlie Kirk was so unbelievably effective. He actually has this really cool quote that I thought was incredible of, you know, these universities get these kids for 4 years or longer. And I can actually go in. The reason they hate me so much is because I can go in and dismantle the entire structure of thought that they have been propagandized into for 4 years in college with just a few really good questions. And this is exactly why speaking up is so important. Calling things what they are is so important, because it changes things in a very real way. And before I close this out, I want to talk about SWAPSO and state chains and stuff, because I think these are really, really, really interesting tools. And I want to talk about like kind of my experience with it. But really quick, let's thank our sponsors. A shout out to Ledin.io for Bitcoin-backed loans. These guys have been great, and especially during a bull market, it's a wonderful thing to be able to not have to sell your Bitcoin and to feel like you have a company that takes their custody extremely seriously, have a simple financial tool, and actually show you proof of reserve so you can know your Bitcoin balance is there. I am in no way saying this is risk-free, but it is an extremely valuable tool for people who are on a Bitcoin standard. And I got a special link for you right down in the show notes. Also, check out GetChroma, getchroma.co. These guys specialize in light health and getting your circadian rhythm right, Basically blue light blockers and that sort of thing, and red light therapy. I'm a big fan, and it's a rabbit hole that has made a significant difference, so check it out. And there's a 10% discount with code Bitcoin Audible. Then check out pubkey.app, that's P-U-B-K-Y, as well as our recent episode, our chat with John Carvalho, on exactly what this is and what their vision is for a decentralized web. And then lastly, HRF is actually... They run the Financial Freedom Report, which I just absolutely value and is an irreplaceable resource. So a shout out to them, as always, for supporting my work. Okay, so Breeze SDK using both Liquid and Lightning, and Albi experimenting with Spark and their SDK, or their integration tools, whatever it is. I went to the website. I think they call it an SDK. And then, of course, more development in Cashew with a Cashew development kit. I cannot emphasize enough, onboarding that is non-custodial and or semi-custodial and has no entry barrier, has no set up a Lightning channel, this sort of thing. Liquid is still, I will say it again and again, because my mom uses Liquid. Liquid is one of the most undervalued tools in our kit as Bitcoiners, especially because of its integration with Lightning. Getting back and forth between Lightning and Liquid is actually extremely easy. I've been thinking for a while about my integration and how I want to use Pear Drive, because I wanted to have Zaps and this sort of thing built into it. But I didn't know exactly how or what I was going to do. I wanted self-custody as a predominant option, but I did not want users to have to feel, I do not want normies to be intimidated by this either. I just want it to be something that's accessible. And that is a very, very difficult mountain to climb. But increasingly, I am more and more impressed with the Breeze SDK and what they're doing and how they're making this available to people and the integration between Liquid and Lightning. This is something to watch very, very closely. In fact, we got, it might be the next episode, we've got a article by Breeze, or by Roy Scheinfeld from Breeze, another one on the utility of Bitcoin, and it's a fantastic article. Again, I always love Roy's stuff. His writing is really good. But then Albi is my favorite non-custodial integration tool. I have Albi. It's exactly why, it is the reason why I finally got around to I finally use my Start9 as my main wallet. I have used my Start9 for a while, but it's always just like a little bit laggy. It was always like a little bit frustrating because I had to do everything over Tor. And when I connected with Zeus, which I think I know now that Zeus does in fact use Nostr Wallet Connect again, or now, which has really been like the big problem, is Tor was just sluggish. Like, Tor is a sucky user experience. Even when you put it in the background, it's just slow. There's delays, everything. I can't tell you how long I spent looking at that stupid spin wheel. And Lightning itself, because it's onion route, it already kind of has its own built-in issues or delays in that way for security reasons. And then to not be able to connect to anything because of the lack of port forwarding and because you had to use some network like Tor, just frustrating as hell. So I would use it for important things and I would use it for big payments, but it was never my daily driver. Now I kind of use my Albi Go, which is connected to my Start9, and Phoenix interchangeably, which is a big deal. And Albi integrating or starting to experiment with Spark, with state chains are so fast. I have used Mercury in their beta, and the beauty, state chains basically work like eCash, except that it is non-custodial, or it is that semi-custodial where you can take the transaction to the chain. So leaning on Nicolas Dorier's piece on defining custody, it is non-custodial because you have unilateral exit. However, the state chain operator can prevent you, obviously, from making a transaction inside the state chain, and you have to trust the state chain operator to not, collude with a previous person to steal your funds or to reverse the transaction that was sent to you by posting an earlier transaction on chain. So the state chain operator is still kind of like the judge, right? However, there are actually two mitigations to this problem. Is that there is a cascading time lock situation where time locks, I think it's actually based on block height. I can't remember exactly how the structure has to work to make this continue indefinitely. I think it's got something, it's something related to block height. I don't know, somehow it's relative to like previous states. I'm not sure if it's like one where you can only do this like 100 times. I really don't think that's how it is, but I don't remember exactly the mechanism by which they pull this off. But essentially the latest transaction always has the lowest time lock. So even if you collude with the state chain operator with a previous state, you will be able to broadcast yours with a lower time lock, but you have to be watching it. So it introduces this idea of like a watchtower like environment where, or capability where you can actually give your transaction to somebody else in order to have them broadcast it on your behalf. And important, there's no like toxic information in that, so that you're not like giving away secret keys. It's just a pre-signed transaction, so you can basically hand it over without like having to worry about like what you can give it to as many people as you want or as you trust to be able to broadcast that on your behalf. So in a lot of ways, it's very similar to ARC in its security profile, or a one-to-many style Lightning setup. But one of the interesting things about this to me is that, you know, development has been slow and meticulous in bringing this into operation. Like, I used Mercury Wallet for the first time like 3 years ago. And I think it's easy to get lost with the new fancy new thing or the new idea and forget just how many tools and systems we have, quote unquote, in the bag that are still waiting to kind of have their moment to shine or to really be tested in the real world. But these tools are coming very, very soon. And I think they're going to have a massive impact on how users interact, basically that last mile. And I think Lightning is going to be this system that puts them all together. And I think it's necessarily so because it literally is the bridge that allows us to speak both Lightning addresses, Liquid addresses, Lightning and Cashew and everything already. And I just can't help but think about like when these things are just easy to use, when we kind of like cross that Rubicon to the layer of the protocol in which it hits the user experience in the right way. I just think this can accelerate really, really fast. Especially with the state of the world and CBDCs going the way that they are going. And all it takes is like one really good use case, one tool or one network that can't be accessed any other way that people just want to use. And I'm hoping that I get to play a part in that. We'll see. It would obviously be arrogant for me to say that I've found the thing, but I'd like to think I found something pretty cool. I got a pretty good idea, but there's still a ton of work to do. Which, it's open source, by the way. I don't even think I mentioned this on the show. Pairdrive is open source. It's available now. Pairdrive Core and the Pairdrive CLI. So not the GUI yet. I am still banging away on the GUI to get things really reliable and robust. It keeps crashing on my brother's computer. And we still have some really dumb, like, oh, it's not seeing these files sorts of problems that need to get sorted out. But they're not. These are not big hurdles at all. And it's literally just when I have the time to do a little vibe coding. But I've been using it a ton on to download, like my brother's been using it to download movies from my Linux machine. So we'll have an episode on this soon. It has been a long haul to get here. I'll have the link to that in the show notes if you want to check out Core and the CLI versions. Like, my GUI is actually the version I'm using on my Mac is actually connected to the command line version on my Linux. And like I said, it's not perfect. It's still like a little rough around the edges, but they're all like real simple problems this time. None of them are structural. And I've also been talking with a handful of people who are already excited to kind of like start building on and with it. So I think movement is going to happen like really, really fast now. But again, I want to do like a full on guys take or maybe a chat episode with Hope, the developer who's basically been doing this the entire time, who's built essentially what we have today. But we're going to do an episode sometime very, very soon, kind of officially unveiling Pairdrive. But I want to have the GUI. I want to have the GUI before we really talk about shit. So anyway, shout out. Love the Financial Freedom Report. Seriously. You know, if nothing else, guys, the reason I think y'all should, I'm going to shill the Financial Freedom Report one more time, and why I actually am very happy that we started covering it on the show, is it gives so many explicit, like direct news items and stories from around the world for an obvious Bitcoin use case. Is it like somebody's like, Bitcoin has no purpose? Like, okay, well, what are you going to say to the 86 million people who just lost bank accounts in Vietnam? And here's the thing. People who watch establishment media don't know shit about that. They have no idea that it even happened. So it's an easy way to shut normies up who have no idea what they're talking about. So you should check it out. You should at least have it in your email database for stuff to reference if you don't. I'll have the link and details down in the show notes. And obviously a shout out to HRF for A, their amazing work, and for supporting my work. With that, I'll catch you guys on the next episode. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. Don't forget to share this out. Thank you all so much for the zaps and for the comments and stuff on Fountain and on Noster and PubKey and Twitter. You guys are what keep this thing going and spread the word, and you are legends for doing it. And until next time, that's my two sats. Good friends, good books, and a sleepy conscience. This is the ideal life. Mark Twain.